The 1600s and 1700s were a period of slow decline for Venice until the Republic of Venice fell to Napoleon in 1797. Welcome to the Venetian Stories podcast. I'm René Sandale, and I'll be your guide on this journey. Episode 8, Decline and Fall. The conflict between Venice on the one side and the major European powers and the Pope on the other never ceased. In the first years of the 1600s, Venice made various laws limited the passage of property to ecclesiastical organizations whose wealth had reached troubling levels. Then in 1605, two high prelates were arrested and tried, sentenced and imprisoned for rape and murder. The Pope demanded that Venice handed over the two to the church tribunals, and that they rescinded the laws limited the donation of property to the church. Venice said no on both claims. The Pope consequently excommunicated the entire Venetian nobility and tried to organize a kind of crusade of other Catholic nations against Venice. Paolo Sarpi, a highly respected theologian who had authored the Venetian missives to the Pope, got a personal excommunication, and later the Catholic Church sent a group of hoodlums to Venice to assassinate him. Sarpi only just survived the vicious attack. This Pope definitely didn't turn the other cheek. The whole affair lasted several years, and was finally resolved by Venice handing over the two criminals and the Pope lifting the excommunication. Venice didn't change its laws. By the early 1600s, Venice was in a rather precarious position geographically. The Habsburgs of Austria governed land to the east, north, and west of Venice, parts of the Dalmatian coast, Austria itself, and Milan, respectively. The Habsburgs were also on the Spanish throne, and Spain controlled the Kingdom of Naples. Who ruled southern Italy was important for Venice because they shared a border. Venetian possessions on the eastern Adriatic coastline and the island of Corfu were just across from southern Italy, where the Adriatic is the narrowest. Venice was almost surrounded by the combined territories of Spain and Austria. The ancient problem of piracy reared its head again with the Uskok population on the Croatian coast, which was formerly under Austria. This led to the War of Gradiska against Austria from 1615 to 1617, and the War of Valtellina from 1620 to 1626. During the first conflict, the Spanish ambassador in Venice ran a spy network which apparently included several members of the Venetian aristocracy. Given the nature of the Venetian Republic, where all adult noblemen participated in the meetings of the Greater Council, any secret meeting between a Venetian nobleman and foreign diplomats was automatically suspect. The atmosphere of paranoia and suspicion led to several trials for treason against members of the nobility. The most conspicuous case was against Antonio Foscarini. He was sentenced to death, strangled in his cell, and the body hung by the feet from a gallows between the two columns in St. Mark's Square. It was later revealed that he was innocent, so his accusers were executed too. Venice was an aristocratic republic without a formal constitution. There were laws, traditions, customs, but nothing was set in stone. Everything was in principle negotiable. Since at least the 1100s, the doges had been required to swear a formal written oath known as the Promissione Ducale, the promise of the doge. This was the main means of curbing the power of the doges, but that too was soon revealed to be negotiable. When Doge Francesco Contarini died in 1625, the normal procedure was followed for the creation of a new doge. This was an elaborate process which led to the selection of an electoral college of 41 nobles who would then choose the next doge. Here the process stalled as none of the two primary candidates could get the needed 25 votes. After some time, the college elected a third candidate, Giovanni Corna. He was head of one of the most ancient and wealthiest Venetian noble families. Furthermore, he had several adult sons in active politics and another in the church. One of his sons was in the electoral college, which wasn't exactly proper, and another two were in the Pregati, the Venetian Senate. The Promissione stipulated that close relatives of the Doge couldn't hold high political offices or positions in the church. The sons of the Doge would have to step down and not occupy any elected positions for the rest of their father's life. Giovanni Corna immediately asked the Signoria, the closest the Republic of Venice had to an executive, that they grant a dispensation so his sons could finish their terms in office. The Signoria conceded. 6 months later, when the Senate was up for its annual renewal, he asked that they could stand for election again, which was also granted. Then another of his sons was made cardinal in the Catholic Church, which required the permission of the Republic. This too was granted. The power and influence of the Corna family was increasing rapidly. The Doge wasn't a powerful figure anymore, but his sons, backed by the prestige of their father and the wealth of the family, exploited the situation with impunity. Obviously, many others in the nobility resented it. The opposition coalesced around the figure of Ranier Zen. He was elected to the Council of Ten in 1627, which was the only body with the authority to stand up to the Doge. When he was chosen as one of the three heads of the Council of Ten, he confronted the Doge directly. The Corna family managed to depose Zen, who later barely survived an assassination attempt orchestrated by one of the Corna brothers by jumping into a canal and escaping in a boat. He was later condemned to exile but refused to leave the city. Venice was as close to a civil war as it had been since the mid-1300s. Such an armed conflict was averted by the death of Giovanni Corna in 1629 at the age of 78. The complex election process set in, and the next doge came from the faction of Ranier Zen, which restored some balance between the different factions within the aristocracy. The conflict consequently fizzled out, but the underlying constitutional problems weren't resolved. Elsewhere in northern Italy, more conflict was brewing. The House of Gonzaga had ruled the Duchy of Mantua since the 1200s, but in 1627, the last duke of that line died. Two different branches of the dynasty claimed the ducal throne. One branch was supported by France and Venice, while the other by the Habsburgs of Spain and Austria, the Holy Roman Empire, and the Savoys of Piedmont. The Gonzaga Nevers, supported by France and Venice, soon took control of the city of Mantua, and the allies of the other branch invaded the duchy. Yet again, all the main European powers were fighting over and on parts of the Italian peninsula. The war lasted several years, and it would have disastrous consequences for Venice and the mainland. Soldiers from Germany brought the plague with them. Imperial troops defeated Venetian forces at Villa Bona in 1630, and many of the fleeing Venetian soldiers sought refuge in nearby Verona. During the summer of 1630, over half the population of Verona perished. Later that year, an ambassador from Mantua arrived in Venice. He too was ill. The Venetian authorities didn't consider it proper to quarantine a high-ranking nobleman from a friendly neighbor with common sailors and merchants on the usual Lazzaretto Island. They therefore had a special quarantine facility built for him and his entourage on another island. One of the workers brought the contagion into the city, where it spread faster than the sick could be rounded up. Over 40,000 people died in Venice in the 1630-31 epidemic. That was over one-fourth of the population, which still hadn't recovered from the 1575 outbreak. In Mantua, the branch of the Gonzaga dynasty, which Venice had supported, prevailed. Several contenders from the other side had died of the plague. The epidemic of 1630-31 would be the last major outbreak of the plague in Venice. The preventive measures around the Venetian Lazzaretti became much more stringent, and there would be no further exceptions from the rules. The relationship with the Ottoman Empire remained as difficult and ambiguous as ever. Whenever Venice had been at war with the major European powers, the Ottoman Empire had either stayed out of the fight or actually backed Venice with anything but arms. Still, Venice and the Ottomans were contenders for the same territories in the Levant. They fought a long war over the control of Crete, which Venice had held since after the Fourth Crusade in the early 1200s. The war lasted almost 25 years, from 1645 to 1669. The Turkish siege of the main city of Candia, modern-day Heraklion, lasted over 20 years. Francesco Morosini, who had surrendered Candia to the Turks after the end of the siege, got some revenge with the War of Morea, which is the Venetian name for the Peloponnese. That war lasted over 15 years, from 1684 to 1699. The Venetian forces, commanded by Morosini, gradually conquered most of the Peloponnese from the Ottomans. In 1687, Venetian forces put Athens to siege. During this siege, the Turks kept their gunpowder on the Acropolis, inside the ancient Temple of Athena, believed to be out of range of the Venetian artillery. It wasn't. The 2,000-year-old temple was blown to pieces when the Venetian guns scored a direct hit. Archaeologists in Greece are still picking up the pieces after that explosion. The Venetians took Athens and the Acropolis, but didn't have the resources to keep them. It was evacuated later and soon after reoccupied by the Turks. The destruction of one of the most important ancient Greek temples had been all for nothing. Two large ancient Greek or Roman statues, one of a sitting lion and one lying down, stood in the harbor of Piraeus since antiquity. Francesco Morosini had them taken to Venice, where they are now guarding the entrance to the Venetian navy docks in the Arsenale. There are still visible pockmarks on them from when the Venetian navy entered the harbor of Athens in 1687, guns blasting. There are also runic inscriptions on the sitting lion dating back to Byzantine times. That single piece of marble is Roman, Greek, Byzantine, Scandinavian, and Venetian all at the same time. On his return to Venice, Morosini was, unsurprisingly, elected Doge. The last major war with the Ottoman Empire was in 1714-18, when Venice lost most of what had been taken a few decades earlier. The only major Greek island to remain under Venetian control was Corfu. Strategically, this was important, as Corfu controlled the passage in and out of the Adriatic Sea. Wars cost money, and decades-long overseas wars cost a lot of money. Venice as a society was rich, but Venice as a state wasn't. The main source of income to cover the expenses of the state had always been taxes on trade, import and export duties. The ruling elite thereby unloaded a proportionally larger part of the tax burden on the middle classes. This had over the centuries handily covered most ordinary expenses. For the extraordinary expenses of war, especially in those cases where Venice had fought for its very survival, such as the War of Chioggia in the late 1300s and the League of Cambrai in the early 1500s, extraordinary funds were raised by extraordinary means. Property taxes and forced loans, which predominantly hit the wealthier parts of society, were ways of raising emergency funds. They hit the ruling elite harder, but they would have lost everything anyway if Venice had lost those wars. Such taxes and forced loans in times of war were one of the causes of the rather odd concept of the poor nobility. Aristocratic families, which were poor and even destitute. Such families weren't expelled from the nobility, but were helped economically in various ways by special laws and traditions, and by selling their votes in the Greater Council. After the locking of the council in 1297, in times of emergencies, the doors of the council could be temporarily unlocked so wealthy citizen families could pay their way to nobility and political power. As it had happened during the War of Chioggia, the League of Cambrai, so it happened during the War of Candia. As trade on the Levant diminished, so did the regular income of the Venetian state. To cover the outgoings, selling entrance into the nobility for cash became more commonplace. Many wealthy citizen families entered the nobility this way during the 1600s and 1700s. the price of nobility was substantial. It was on the order of 100,000 Venetian ducats paid up front, enough to buy several quite presentable properties on the Grand Canal. The patrician class was subdivided by the age of the lineage. There were old families, new families, very new families, and finally, families made by money. The conquest of the Peloponnese was the last of the Venetian dream of empire. The Venetian overseas dominions were reduced to Corfu and parts of the eastern coast of the Adriatic. Venice in the 1700s was a much smaller place and a much more European place, even if for many travelers from Western Europe, it still appeared odd and Eastern. Much of the long-distance trade in the Eastern Mediterranean had disappeared, while regional trade between the nations around the Mediterranean continued. The global trade had moved into the Atlantic, Pacific, and Indian Oceans. The mainland territories therefore became more important. The wealthy elite, both nobles and citizens, invested their money in agricultural estates on the mainland rather than in trade. Venice, which had never really had a landed gentry, there was almost no land, now had an elite whose main income came from large mainland estates. It is almost the opposite process of what happened elsewhere in Europe. The city of Venice had expanded slowly until the late 1500s. But that expansion stopped when all the shallow mudflats around the city had been reclaimed and built up. The main architectural trends of the 1600s and the 1700s, Baroque, Rococo, Neoclassicism, are therefore mostly absent in Venice itself. On the mainland, however, these styles abound in the many great villas the new landowners built on their estates. The Venetian countryside is full of villas by Palladio and other renowned architects from the period. Outside the elite, manufacturing was still the most important part of the economy. Glass, textiles, lace, printing, etc., all remained important. For young men from wealthy families in Northern Europe, the Grand Tour became an important part of the education. It was usually a journey of several years, taking the young men around to all the most important European cities, and Italian cities were high on the list. Venice, Florence, and Rome were almost obligatory stops. The Venetian Carnival became a major attraction, and so did the Venetian courtesans and gambling establishments. Artists like Canaletto and Rosalba Carriera, and many others, sold artworks to these tourists. Venetian arts and crafts flourished like never before and had buyers come from all of Europe. Even if Venice was on the decline in the 1700s, it appeared as rich and opulent as ever. The French Revolution put a huge question mark on some of the basic tenets of most European societies, like the divine rights of kings and the legitimacy of aristocratic rule. The Republic of Venice was very much aristocratic rule, based on the hereditary rights of the nobility. And the French Revolution therefore resonated with a large part of the Venetian population. The revolution didn't have any immediate effect in Venice, not in 1789 when it started, nor in 1793 when the French king was executed. The War of the First Coalition from 1792 to 1797 involved almost every major European monarchy against revolutionary France. Venice remained neutral. The war, however, came to Venice anyway. In 1796, a 26-year-old Field Marshal Napoleon led a French army into northern Italy, where Milan was an Austrian dominion. After a battle, the routed Austrian army fled into Venetian territory. Napoleon pursued them. Soon his army was under the walls of the Venetian city of Crema, where he demanded they accepted a French garrison as a precaution. This repeated in Bergamo, Brescia, Verona, Vicenza, Padua, and so on. The Venetians kept sending dispatches and negotiators to Napoleon, reiterating their neutrality and requesting the French left. But Napoleon didn't care. Within less than a year, Napoleon was in control of the entire Stato di Terra. When the Venetians finally realized that Napoleon would never respect their neutrality, they tried to mobilize forces from the Stato di Mar for a last stand in defense of the Dogato. It was too little and too late. And when Napoleon sent an ultimatum, Venice surrendered. The Greater Council met, debated, and voted to dissolve itself. The Doge consequently abdicated. Membership of the council was hereditary, so no new legitimate council could be formed. Without the council, no new Doge could be elected. The Republic of Venice was no more. While it's almost impossible to determine when the Republic came into existence as a sovereign entity, we have a date and almost an hour for the end of it, May 12th, 1797. Napoleon promised the common Venetians a more democratic regime, and a provisional municipal government was established quickly after the surrender. He didn't, however, intend to keep that promise. Negotiations with the Austrians were already underway. The result was the Treaty of Campo Formio, in which France gained the Austrian Netherlands and Milan, and Austria the naval bases of Venice and Trieste. Before Christmas 1797, the workers of the navy docks in the Arsenale were sent home with their pay for the rest of the year. French troops then moved in and destroyed everything. Tools, models, ships were cut to pieces or burned. On January 18th, 1798, Austrian troops entered Venice. Venice, which had been an independent state for over 1,000 years, was now reduced to being a pawn in the game of the great powers. Laws, customs, traditions established over centuries disappeared overnight. Everything the Venetians had taken for granted forever was no more. The privileges of the nobility and the original citizens evaporated. Everybody had to follow the laws of another country and be subject to rulers who spoke another language. Elements of Venetian culture came under attack almost immediately. Ancient celebrations and feasts had been a way of maintaining a bond between rulers and the ruled, and in any case, a source of entertainment and free food. Under the Austrians, feasts celebrating the great events of the past, like the conquest of Constantinople, were no longer held. There was no Venetian carnival in 1798, or in many of the following years for that matter. there was no way the newly arrived Austrian rulers would let the Venetians roam around the city at night wearing masks. The carnival was only really resuscitated in the 1970s in a very different form. For most Venetians, rich or poor, noble, citizen or commoner, the future looked bleak. That was today's episode of Venetian Stories. Thank you for traveling with me. The next episode will land whenever I have time to record it, but if all goes well, within a couple of weeks. If you happen to come to Venice, come join one of my tours about the history of Venice. You can find them at historywalksvenice.com.